As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic Soccer Show, where today we are talking about Barcelona and their upcoming tie with Manchester United in the Europa League. A tie that feels to many like a Champions League game. My name is Jack Collins. I'll be your host there, and I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by the Athletic's very own Paul Bayus. Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm really excited about this because I think that maybe if people haven't been keeping an eye on Barcelona, it's maybe gone under the radar a bit. But I think right now for me, Barcelona, maybe Napoli aside, are the best side to watch in Europe. And it's not always hammering in goals. It's just the fact that Barcelona, for the first time in ages, feel like such a cohesive unit. This is 16 unbeaten in all competitions, 8 wins in a row in all competitions, 11 points clear at the La Liga summit, although Real Madrid do have a game in hand, but it's 7 goals conceded in 21 La Liga games. Everything looking very rosy at Camp Nou.
Yeah. They are a fun team to watch. They have like this group of exciting young talents that they really want to improve. They really want to progress. They really want to bring the club to the next level, or probably to the level that they should be and that they lost like in the last 5 seasons maybe. And I think that this is still like not the end product of what Xavi wants for Barcelona, but it's something that we see glimpses of what Barcelona can be. I would like highlight the work that Xavi is doing here too, because like from a tactical point of view, I think that he is adding like more things and more registers and ways to play that former managers in Barcelona haven't done in the past. Maybe because the group of players didn't allow it, or it was more difficult to shape like different formations with the players that you had. But now Xavi has like, yeah, just a group of players that is willing to do anything and to learn and to, yeah, and to bring this spirit back to Barcelona, which make them, as I was saying, a fun team to watch, an exciting team to watch. And probably, I don't know if like with Napoli, like the best team in Europe, but for sure, I think that they are in the top 10 of teams in Europe, and that for the level that they are showing right now, this could be easily a Champions League draw, what we're going to see like on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the names jump out. This was a Champions League final, obviously, back in the late 2000s. But I think just generally in the way that the two teams are playing, and I'm excited to look at a little bit how that game is going to pan out. But just generally, I think what we're seeing in Barcelona this year is maybe that moving out of the old guard. Obviously, Sergio Busquets is injured at the moment. Jordi Alba is still rotating in here and there at left back with Alex Balde. But we saw Gerard Piqué leave the club. Sergio Roberto is here and there off the bench, but there's not much going on there in that regard. It feels in so many ways like a new team, like new leaders have stepped up. And obviously people are going to pick out Pedri and Gavi in the way that they've taken the 8 and 6 shirts. It feels very, very old school in exactly what we're seeing there. And it's beautiful to watch, obviously, two players who at least had a spell in La Masia. In Pedri's case, obviously came in as a transfer. Gavi came in from Betis when he was a real youngster. But two players who have come through at the very least a little bit of La Masia's system. But I think also, you know, you're looking for leaders across the pitch. And what we've seen in recent years is Barcelona struggle a little bit, I think, at centre-back, Piqué on the decline. But Ronald Araujo has stepped up and become, I think, what is the cornerstone of this defence. And his kind of rise behind the scenes, if you will, he was excellent even when Barcelona were struggling, I thought. But now he just seems like he's this kind of irresistible force in the middle of the defence. And he's been, I think he's now up there in the conversation with the best centre-backs in the world. And it feels soon to do that. But his performance is justified, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that he can be up there. I don't know if the best, but he can be up there. Like, in terms of the physical condition that he has, I don't see many attackers in the world who are capable just to dribble past him, basically. We've seen all the games that Barcelona has played against Real Madrid recently when he was available, because I can remember that on the League Clásico that we had in October, he wasn't fit to play, and Real Madrid won. But in every game that he's played as a kind of right back, just in front of Vinicius Junior did absolutely nothing. And a player out of position, because Araujo was not playing in his natural position, which is the center back. If he can do that with one of the best wingers in the world, I mean, that shows you a bit like the level of player that we're talking about here. I'm kind of interested to see what is Xavi going to do on Thursday, if he's going to deploy Araujo as a right back as well, just to battle with Marcus Rashford, because it's going to be another interesting matchup. It's going to be like the tactical battle, probably, and a good thing to ask probably to Erik ten Hag tomorrow in the press conference. But now that you were mentioning that Ronald Araujo as a leader in this dressing room, it's fun that you say that, because we haven't discussed that, but we have an interview with Marc-André ter Stegen coming on The Athletic, which is going to come out tomorrow, and he basically highlights Ronald Araujo as one of the mans that you have to really look at the middle of the defense, and like a bold boy in the dressing room, which is a really important thing, and probably it's the kind of character that Barcelona needed in terms of like making this change of guard that you were just mentioning, with not just Piqué and Jordi Alba and Sergio Busquets taking different roles, but we cannot forget that in the last 5 years, such like big figures like Leo Messi, like Luis Suarez, these kind of players left the club. So Barcelona needed to find like replacement for that. And I think that Ronald Araujo has everything to get at this level of relevance inside the locker room.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way. I mean, his kind of performance on the pitch and the way that he conducts himself on the pitch, I think, speaks to that quite nicely. It might, you know, obviously some players are leaders on the pitch and they're quiet once they get back into the dressing room. But just the way that he carries himself and the way that he organizes the defense around him, often with far more senior players in it, you see that, you know, people look to him as a natural leader. And, you know, there was a question that was put to us, I think, generally, that was if Araujo had been fit during the Champions League campaign, would Barca be in the latter stages of its campaign? And if so, where would they sit within the pecking order of actually where it looks? Because there is a lot of teams in this Champions League last 16 who are either wobbling, have had difficult seasons, who aren't in the places we thought they were last year. And actually, then you look at Barcelona and the way that the team have come together. It feels like, you know, I know you said earlier that it wasn't quite maybe the best teams in Europe, but I think that generally, there aren't many teams I'd look at right now and go, Barcelona wouldn't best you over two legs if everything went as has been going in recent weeks.
Yeah. I mean, this question is something that like senior sources at the Camp Nou or like close to the dressing room, they ask themselves that very same question. Just if Ronald Araujo and Jules Koundé could have played in that critical games against Inter Milan, probably Barcelona's destiny would be another one right now. But at the same time, I think this is not an excuse, because any big team in Europe have to be prepared for that.
Injuries,
because those are things that can happen, and Barcelona has to be ready for that. But I mean, basically, I think, of course, it was like a massive blow for the team and for the club and for the fans, above everyone, in my opinion, just to get kicked out of the Champions League that early. But I think that still Barcelona has managed to find like some kind of hope and some kind of way to make this season like a successful one. Because I think that if they manage to win La Liga, which they are like in a really good place, there's going to be no fan at Barcelona who is going to deem this season as an unsuccessful one, because all what Barcelona fans want is just to have like a proof that this team can do something in the long term. And I think that a league title would be that, basically.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I completely agree. Now, obviously, Manchester United, Barcelona, the big talking point in so many ways is going to be Frenkie de Jong. We have so much to talk about in terms of the matchups, and we'll come on to lots of it. But I think the headlines are going to be dominated by Frenkie de Jong. Obviously, someone that Erik ten Hag has worked with before, who he wanted to sign for Manchester United in the summer. There were plenty of conflicting reports, left, right, and center. Frenkie's staying, Frenkie's going. In the end, he stayed. And one of the big things I think about this season is Frenkie's re-envelopment within the first team. And actually, we're seeing a Frenkie de Jong in better form and better nick, and I think fitting better into this Barcelona side than we have done at any point in his career in Catalonia. So when you're looking at that and thinking, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about Xavi and the way that he'd changed this team in order to get the best out of players, this feels like a moment in that he feels that he's got the best out of Frenkie. And insofar as Sergio Busquets missing for this tie doesn't feel like the end of the world in a way that it might have done a year ago, because Frenkie is playing in such a wonderful manner.
Exactly, exactly. I agree with that. I still think that Sergio Busquets can be like an important figure for this team. Plus, like alongside Frenkie de Jong, I think that Busquets allows Frenkie de Jong just to be more free, basically, and just to run box to box and have this freedom just to dribble past opponents, which is his biggest talent. But yeah, Xavi basically has given Frenkie the confidence, and as he said like a couple of weeks ago, I think that he feels that they found like the perfect place for Frenkie, because the biggest debate when Frenkie arrives to Barcelona is that fans or managers couldn't find like his place, because he wasn't used to play as a holding midfielder, being the only one there. Because at the Netherlands national team, he used to play like with a double pivot, similar than at Ajax. And then he wasn't playing like really, really well either, like as a number eight or a number nine, as an attacking midfielder. So it was tricky to find this position. But now with this extra midfielder that Xavi has added, like, yeah, just into the mix with Gavi, with Pedri, with Sergio Busquets, or with Kessié, which is the man that is most likely going to play on Thursday. I think that with this four man in there, he manages just to keep the structure that he wants while allowing like talents like Frenkie de Jong, like Gavi, every now and then just to free themselves and just to go up and do whatever they feel which is best for the team. And the most important thing is that the four of them are like in top confidence and in top form. I mean, the form that they are in and the confidence and how important they feel for the team and for the locker room is what brought them to this level that they are showing right now. And that is going to be the key for Barcelona if they want to go through in that tie.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, this four-man midfield, because it, you know, often Barcelona are shaped in a 4-3-3. It's been the Cruyffian tradition for however long at the club, that has felt like if anyone strays away from it, there are consequences. It's how Barcelona expects to play. It's how Barcelona fans expect the team to play. And what I think is really interesting about this, because it feels like a kind of like a plus one player in so many ways. It's not a 4-4-2. There is very much a right winger in, you know, Rafinha, or who has had the spot for a while, or Dembele, obviously not playing at the moment. Lewandowski plays as a traditional number nine. And the way that it works, I suppose, is the fact that Pedri and Gavi are such intelligent young players that they just know where to fill space. And so however the team lines up, whether it's Gavi nominally on the left wing, or if it's Pedri nominally on the left wing, and Xavi has rotated them against different opposition to provide different things, it's their ability to read the game and find those spaces that makes the entire thing work. And Barcelona are blessed with two of the most exciting midfield talents in the world right now.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I mean, the tactical intelligence that they both have, it's off the charts, basically. I think that Xavi prefers to have Pedri more in the middle, more close like to areas where he can, whether like league passes to the final third or help the team in the build-up, depending on the game, depending on what he needs. And Gavi is like a free spirit. He's just full of passion. He just he doesn't hold himself back. He doesn't care if his opening is like two meters tall. He's just a fighter. And this kind of a spirit is what Barcelona needs to fill all the spaces and all the blanks and all the wideness that all the width that Xavi wants to give to the pitch. I also think that one player that deserves one credit, a bit of credit for that, is Alejandro Valde.
Yeah.
Because playing as a left back, he's mostly operating as a wing back or as a winger. Because Xavi just protects himself like with a back three sometimes with Christensen, Koundé and Araujo, because they are so good and so reliable that he can afford that. And then just push Valde up just to keep that width and play with the good ones inside, which is like conceptually what Barcelona is about, like providing width to the pitch and just left the intelligent and technically good players inside to let them find the spaces because they are so good with that. And that's what Xavi is finding with this system, with this team, with the players that he's had. I think that he's managing basically to take the best out of the team, which at the end of the day, no matter what style you want to play and what formation you want to play, taking the best out of the team is the biggest target that you have as a manager. And I think that Xavi is having success with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, if I'm not mistaken, there's only one under 21 player in Europe with more assists than Alejandro Valde, which is a pretty stunning statistic considering that he hasn't started, you know, every game. He's worked his way into this side.
Yeah.
And it felt like Barcelona fans were calling for his introduction for a long, long time. And Barcelona have had terrible luck with left backs beneath Jordi Alba. Now, obviously, it's a difficult role to play because you know that Alba is going to play most of the time, especially in his peak. Now he's coming a little bit off that. That's fine. But generally, I think you look at the amount of left-backs that the Barcelona cycled through in their attempt to find a successor, an understudy to Jordi Alba. And it's, you know, and one that's come from their own ranks has actually made the difference. And it's testament to the fact, and, you know, we talk about that great La Masia generation, right? And lots of people will discuss it. And the question was always, could they produce another one? Now, the answer to that question might be no. It might never reach the heights of what that generation achieved. But I think when you look through this side now and you look through the players coming off the bench, you look at some of the players doing well out on loan as well. This feels like another, if not golden generation, then at least another generation where Barcelona can rely on their own academy talent to provide the basis and the kind of heartbeat of this squad.
Yeah, I agree with that too, because with all the financial problems and the off-the-pitch problems that Barcelona have been linked with in the past, it is just priceless to have the academy they have. It is just priceless because what they found, I mean, they have a really good generation now, but I mean, and I've spoken about that with a lot of sources and people like involved in the industry here in Spain. At the end of the day, you can have talents, but you have to give them minutes. You have to give them confidence. And Barcelona, for one reason or the other one, they had to give them confidence now. Maybe because they didn't have like many options to sign a lot of players, or maybe because the manager just saw, okay, this guy Gavi and this guy Pedri and this guy Araujo, we have to put them on the first team. Just whatever reason you want to credit. But the fact is that they did it. And it is just, I mean, if someone at Barcelona or someone, any like economics professor or something like that, if they could figure out which is the best way to get out of like the financial turmoil that Barcelona is right now, no one could choose for a better option than having so many young talents that they came through the club for nothing and that they are just tipped to be like the next big thing, basically. And like having mentioned all this talent that we have mentioned, we have forgotten now at this point about Ansu Fati, which back in the day, he was probably like I'm not going to say like the next Lionel Messi because no one is going to be that, but he looked like the perfect...
The pinnacle, the crown jewel.
Exactly, exactly. And now, well, because he's not in his best form, because of the injuries that he's had in the past and because he's not starting, it seems that he's more dispensable, if you want to call it that way. But again, like another display of talent, which is like amazing and a proof of what Barcelona has in their own system.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Yeah, I think this is it. And, you know, we'll come on to the finances towards the end of the podcast. I just want to kind of touch on the fact that while everything looks sunny, there still remain clouds on the horizon in the kind of longer term picture. But I think what's going to be interesting with this game is where it's won or lost. And I think you were spot on earlier when you say that battle between whoever plays right back, whether it be Araujo or whether it be Koundé against Marcus Rashford, and who's been in absolutely flying form. It's going to be very interesting. I also think this midfield battle, and look, we talked about the shape of Barcelona's midfield. We know that Casemiro is coming back, an old foe, back to haunt the Camp Nou again. But you actually look at the rest of Manchester United's midfield. Sabitzer, I believe, is suspended because he picked up 3 yellow cards in the Champions League with Bayern. We know that Christian Eriksen is injured. They're the two players that, you know, Manchester United have looked to progress with in terms of next to Casemiro for the team to kind of work on its full operational level. Now, Bruno can do lots of different things. He's a wonderful footballer. But I think that Manchester United look weaker when they don't have a number 8 in their double pivot. They look like they have no one to progress the ball quite as quickly into Bruno, into Marcus Rashford, whoever that is. Fred will probably play there, and Fred is a fine, more than competent footballer, but doesn't have the same kind of esteem. I do wonder if, you know, a newly goal-scoring threat of Pedri, I think this is his, you know, top-scoring season ever. Yeah, he looks on track for double figures at the very least, maybe 15, given the form he's in. And, you know, the kind of impetus of Gavi and the ability of Frenkie to wander around players alongside Frank Kessié, who we all know has that physical combativeness to actually get on top of Casemiro, but also has those late runs that I loved and intelligent late runs into the box to make things happen. I have a funny feeling that Barcelona's midfield might swallow Manchester United up here, especially in a home leg, in the first leg, and with so many key players missing.
I think you're really spot on as well. I think on the first leg, that's going to be like the place where Barcelona has to win the game if they want to win it. Because I think that Manchester United, both teams have injuries because Barcelona is not going to have Dembele and Busquets. But the injuries that Man United have have a bigger impact to the team. Because I think that if Eriksen would have been available, probably he would play, and Bruno would play, and Casemiro would play, and Fred maybe would play too. So Ten Hag will not have the chance to strengthen this midfield maybe as he would have wanted to. And I think that it's going to be interesting to see how he compensates it. If he wants to have like a more aggressive centre-back just to go and press out to the midfielder, to the Pedris, to the likes of Frenkie de Jong if he goes up. That's a good debate as well, because I think that maybe Shaw is going to play as a centre-back. I think that he did like some kind of test on the weekend. We could see with Shaw and Harry Maguire playing against Leeds, and I think that Shaw was the best player on the pitch or on the defence for sure. He can play as a centre-back, and he can be like this aggressive player that steps out of his position just to do an intelligent pressing. So it's going to be like the middle of the park is going to be where one of the areas where the game is going to be decided for sure. The other one probably is going to be like the just anywhere where Marcus Rashford is. And then, let's see how both managers try to compensate and how to hurt the opponent with the system. But if you ask me who I think that might be favorite for the first game, I would say Barcelona, just because of this, because of the injuries and the suspended players. Lisandro Martinez won't be playing either, which is a pivotal figure for Man United as well. So I think that Barcelona has to take advantage of that and try to get the best result of the first leg. Having said that, I think that there is practically no result for Barcelona that guarantees a qualification before going to Old Trafford.
Yeah, it feels like that, doesn't it? Especially just, as you say, the form that both are in. Now, I wanted to just ask about Lewandowski, because obviously 14 goals in 18 appearances in La Liga. It's a cracking return. He had 5-5 in the Champions League, 2-2 in the Copa, 2-2 in the Supercopa. It's been a stunning season in many ways. But watching him against Villarreal at the weekend, and look, this is a good Villarreal side. I don't think anyone's questioning that. But just seemed a shade off the pace, finishing-wise. And I think, you know, we've seen a lot of 1-0 wins for Barcelona this season. And that's something to be commended. I think it's a good thing in terms of you see teams building from these 1-0s rather than 5-3s or you know, 5-4s. Yeah. It's probably better to have the control and the ability to just be able to go, okay, we're just not letting you in and we don't have to play at our best going forward in order to win games if that's the case. And so when you kind of look at all of these things and you kind of take it into account, where is Lewandowski's head at? Because he feels like he's snatching a little bit of chances at the moment. Maybe it is the fact that, you know, Bayern were a free scoring machine where he was able to dominate. He's still got an unbelievable scoring record for Barcelona, but it's not quite as maybe headline grabbing as it was over in Munich.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, in my opinion, it's basically like a dip of form. After the World Cup, I think that Lewandowski didn't have the same impact in the team that he had before it. I think that it can be deemed as just normal because you cannot be like in top form for the whole season. Plus, with the World Cup here in the middle, that was making like things even more difficult in terms of like physical condition and preparation. Luckily for Barcelona, other players have stepped up. But yeah, I think that it's fair to have this debate and it's healthy for Barcelona just to question themselves that Lewandowski hasn't been as difference maker like in the last 3 weeks, let's say, than what he had been like in November or in December, where he basically won games by himself for Barcelona. Having said that, probably we just set him up for a big night on Thursday.
Maybe that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if that works for Barcelona, I think that all the fans are going to want me in this podcast like for a long time.
Every week we'll have a recurring feature going on. Paul, just a couple of questions before we go. One is, you know, you talked about the fact that it was hard for Barcelona fans to, you know, take the fact that there was that early exit of the Champions League. Now, last year in the Europa League, we saw some funny scenes at Camp Nou in the fact that obviously Frankfurt came to town and people had sold loads of tickets to Frankfurt fans. They were all over the home ends. It wasn't particularly pleasant to see. Obviously, Barcelona felt like they probably should have been favourites for that competition and they crashed out in a quite, well, very unconvincing display, I'll say. And you look at all of it. Now, this team feels in better shape this time round to go on and win this competition. And I think most people will say to you that whoever wins out this tie out of Barcelona and Manchester United will be favourites for the Europa League crown. I've always said about the Europa League, and it's my favourite competition, so I'm biased in this, in that if you don't respect the Europa League, it has no respect for you. And it's backed up by the fact that I think 8 of the last 11 winners were teams who started in the Europa League rather than teams that dropped down from the Champions League. Yeah. Do you think there's an element of Barcelona fans this time around, given the team is younger, a little bit more exciting, more dynamic, will buy into the competition a little bit more? And it's a competition that Barcelona haven't won before. Now, there's not many competitions you can say that for. And then maybe it is because it's a second tier, if you will, competition. But I do wonder kind of how the fan base will get into this. I think the Man United game in this regard might be a blessing in that it feels like a massive game in the fact that it's Barcelona, Man United, and then it moves on, and as opposed to getting a smaller side who have come through in second place in their group, maybe would have felt more uncomfortable.
I kind of agree with you in the sense that the Man United game is like regarded as really big here in Barcelona. At the same time, I mean, I think that the analysis here has to start from the fact that Barcelona fans are not particularly excited about playing in the Europa League. That's a fact. Barcelona fans want to be in the Champions League. And as you said, Europa League is not in the same terms of elite level as the Champions League can be. And Barcelona fans want to be there. That's probably like what the episode that we saw with Eintracht Frankfurt for me was like the perfect like a storm for everyone, because Barcelona fans weren't like really excited for the Europa League. I know that it was like the later stage of the competitions, but it wasn't like a big European team. Fans probably didn't feel that excited to go to the stadium. Meanwhile, Eintracht Frankfurt fans felt that this was like once of a lifetime opportunity, that maybe they wouldn't have like another chance to go to the Camp Nou and to have a big night. So they all went there. Barcelona fans were just happy to not go to the stadium. Then the club was happy to find a way to fulfill like all the seats. I'm sure that, well, they didn't know that that the pictures that we would see after the games would be like the pictures that ended up happening. But it was like, yeah, as I was saying, just like the perfect storm. It's something that is not going to happen against Man United, because from the club, they expect like Camp Nou to be like in full capacity. But that's just because Barcelona fans are just, they are desperate to test themselves against a big European team. And that's what Man United is going to be. It's going to be like a big test for the club in terms of like showing them where they kind of are in Europe. It's not the Champions League. It's not quarter final of the Champions League or round of 16 of the Champions League, which is going to be played now. But they feel like it's going to be like, what's the temperature in the club? This game is going to tell. And that's what Barcelona fans want. Because I'd say that if in the next round they draw like against, and no disrespect for any club, but with a team that doesn't have like the pedigree of Man United, the fans won't be that much excited as they are now. So Barcelona socios and members want in the Europa League to have like a good test to tell them where they are in European football. And I think that they can find it now, but they couldn't find it last season in the Europa League, which it doesn't tells anything good about the club, because like a big club should like face any game with the mentality just to win it. And it's the trophy, as you were saying, that Barca doesn't have on their cabinet, and they have to want it. But like the mind of the fans didn't operate in that way. And I think that the club itself could see that.
It's going to be interesting, isn't it? Because this year's Europa League has a lot of giants of the European game.
That's Arsenal, so
obviously,
there.
Well, it's Manchester United, Barcelona, obviously, then Juventus, Sporting, Shakhtar Donetsk, okay, maybe a little bit less, but Ajax, you know, and then you look at the Spanish sides involved, and you look at Sevilla, you look at Real Betis. Now, Sevilla obviously having a dreadful season, but we're talking about the two big clubs in Seville. Real Sociedad, I think everyone has come to respect around Spanish football for the way that they've achieved. Indeed. And then you have Monaco and PSV Eindhoven, Roma, Arsenal.
You
know, arguably what you want from a Barcelona's perspective in that regard is you want the hardest run possible to the final in order that the excitement keeps up. And again, as you say, no disrespect to the likes of a Union Saint-Gilloise, who are obviously Belgian champions last year, but you don't want that game if you're Barcelona. You want the hard test to keep coming, because it keeps everyone's levels up for a competition, and it reduces the round of a shock.
Yeah, plus it's something, I mean, with the young generation that Barcelona has right now, I think that you have to show them that Barcelona can provide them with high-tension games, with high-level games, with, like, the biggest scenario, the game that all the sides and all the attention in the world football is looking at. Because that's what Barcelona is used to, and that's what the likes of Gavi and Pedri want. And the way just to convince him, to convince them that Barcelona is just the place to be is just to show them that Barcelona can be able to attract that, to attract those kind of games. Of course, Europa League is not ideal, but the fact of, having the ability of making them feel on the big stage, it's a crucial thing that Barcelona has to aspire for.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Now, we mentioned it midway through the podcast, but I wanted to kind of finish with this. Everything does look very rosy at the moment in terms of the way Barcelona are playing, but the financial issues remain on the horizon. Will you just give us a kind of brief overview of what has to happen in the summer and where Barcelona are in these ways? Because it feels like the problems haven't gone away, even if they've been assuaged a little bit.
Yeah, the problems haven't gone away. And basically, well, we've seen like a glimpse of it this January where Barcelona have struggled even to register Gavi's new contract under La Liga salary rules, because La Liga is being like really strict for a club like Barcelona just to basically fix the mess and fix how discompensated were like their budgets. Basically, they expect Barcelona just to reduce their wage bill, and Barcelona is on their way, or at least is what the club claims. But there's still like a long way to go. In Barcelona, in summer, we expect like a huge activity, not as much in signings, but maybe like in the high offices in the club, just to try to reduce like the salary bill. There are a lot of talks of players potentially going out. There's Sergio Busquets nearing the end of his contract. Sergio Busquets has a big salary, so it has to be seen what happens with him. There's figures like Gerard Piqué, who left, who were like earning a big salary as well. So Barcelona is basically heading to this recalculation of how they invest their money. There's still work to be done with La Liga, as I was saying, being really strict with it. The next challenge that the club has is to register Ronald Araujo's and Marcos Alonso's new contracts under the salary rules, which is something that La Liga is closely monitoring too. Alejandro Balde, we are being told that his contract is basically all agreed, but they are waiting to give him the green light to see how the financial thing with La Liga salary bill works. So Barcelona is basically doing a lot of diplomacy here, seeing how they can fit this kind of numbers, because the problem that they have is not as much of cash flow terms, because they have cash, they have money to invest, but they don't have margin to inscribe players within like the salary limit, which is something that they are, as I was saying, working to try to fix.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few big names out on loan. Obviously, Serginho Dest has been at AC Milan. Clement Lenglet is at Tottenham. Samuel Umtiti is, as we were talking before the podcast, is at Lecce and having a great old time at Lecce, with all accounts. And Francisco Trincao is still on the books. So, I mean, somehow. I have no idea how that's still going, but he's still there. Are these the kind of exits we're kind of looking at in the summer, as well as maybe the likes of, well, perhaps a Ferran or someone like that who seems to be on the fringes of the squad rather than any key pieces being sold?
I think that most of the loan players are really likely to not be part of Barcelona's squad next season. Umtiti and Lenglet are players that, of course, Barcelona have better options now on defense, and it's... I think that saying it's very likely that they are going to be in the squad next season is an understatement. I think that Serginho Dest they are going to try to sell him permanently too, because Barcelona is looking for other options in the right flank, basically. And yeah, then we see what happens. But at the same time, I wouldn't dismiss like the option of like some big player leaving the club. There's been a lot of talk in Barcelona about Ansu Fati. There's the thing here with Ansu Fati and Ferran Torres, because something that I tried to explain like in some pieces that I've done like in the recent weeks, for Barcelona has a different impact selling for the same amount of money Ansu Fati than Ferran Torres. If you sell Ansu Fati for, let's say, and we are just being like hypothetical here, but if you sell Ansu Fati for 60 million, it's like 60 million of full profit for the club, because Barcelona had to pay nothing for him. But in terms of Ferran Torres, they had to pay more than 50 million for him. Yep. So they still have to pay money for Ferran Torres. They still have to amortize him.
Yeah.
And selling him for 60 million doesn't report like as many profit to the books as Ansu Fati would do. That's probably why there's been like these rumors and this speculation around Ansu Fati, more than from a sporting perspective or a sporting point of view, from an economic point of view, from a financial point of view, which somehow some important people at Barcelona is how they are looking at the club right now, because the club has to be managed in that regard as well too. So it's a difficult position. Let's see what happens. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't like fully dismiss the option of a big name like Ansu Fati going out next summer.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see how Barcelona move in the markets next summer. But before that, we have an incredibly interesting game against Manchester United this week. Thank you, Paul. It's been a real, real pleasure having you on.
Really happy to be here. Anytime.
Thank you very much. I've been Jack Collins. This has been the Athletic Soccer Show, talking all things Barcelona ahead of their clash with Manchester United in the Europa League this Thursday. It is an absolutely unmissable fixture. Make sure you're all over it. We'll see you soon.